We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, welcome to the Papers podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Caroline Priscott, a midwife by background with 20 years experience in the field, including 6 years as a team leader caring for women and birthing people with significant vulnerabilities, such as mental health conditions. In this series, we speak to authors of papers published in one of ACAM's three journals. These are the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry, commonly known as JCPP, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health, known as CAM, and JCPP Advances. Today, I am interviewing Dr. Katie Birkhouse, Assistant Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioural Health, Children's Hospital, and the Ohio State University. Katie is the author of the annual research review paper, Emotion Processing in Offspring of Mothers with Depression Diagnosis, a systematic review of neural and physiological research, recently published in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry. If you're a fan of our Papers podcast series, please subscribe on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know how we did with the rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues. Thank you so much for joining us today to discuss what is truly a fascinating piece of research. Can we start with an introduction about who you are and what you do?
Yes, of course. And thank you for having me today. So I also want to mention that this work was co-led by my colleague, Dr. Adam Kajawa at Vanderbilt University. So as you mentioned, I'm an assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral health at Nationwide Children's Hospital and also the Ohio State University. So I'm a clinical researcher, and my program of research has two main areas of focus. The first involves studying risk factors for youth depression from a biological lens, and the second involves applying this mechanism-informed work to the development of novel prevention or intervention efforts to reduce youth depression risk.
Thank you, Katie. Let's turn to your paper. Can you give us a brief overview to set the scene?
Sure. So in general, we know that one of the most potent predictors of depression risk is a family history of depression. That is, if you have a mother with a history of major depression, you are 2 to 3 times more likely to experience depression by early adulthood relative to youth of mothers that have no depression history. So we also know that these offspring are also prone to exhibit other forms of psychopathology, such as anxiety disorders or behavior problems. So why is this? Well, we know that there are environmental and genetic contributions that go into this risk. In addition, there's also a significant wealth of research suggesting that alterations in the processing of emotion may be one mechanism driving these elevated rates of psychopathology among these kids of depressed mothers. So by emotion processing, we simply mean how we react and regulate our emotions. So when presented with something that evokes an emotion, something that's angry or fearful or sad in nature, individuals can differ in how they react and respond to these emotions. They also can differ in how they regulate their responses. So using different strategies to perhaps reduce our negative emotions, such as sadness, or even using different strategies to enhance some of our positive emotions, such as happiness. And we think that these individual differences in emotion processing may be one way through which maternal depression results in future forms of psychopathology, such as depression in the offspring. So in our review, we essentially wanted to investigate this possibility and to synthesize evidence for associations between clinical diagnoses of depression in mothers and offspring's emotion processing abilities at the biological level. We also wanted to focus on biological measures within our review paper, as these types of measures tend to offer unique insight into emotional reactivity and regulation across development, even beginning in early infancy, without relying on child or parent reports, which can sometimes be susceptible to biases based on mood state. And this approach also offers insight into the underlying neurobiological processes associated with emotion processing disturbances and subsequent depression risk. And then I'll just end by saying that one of the main motivations for this review paper in terms of identifying these specific mechanisms is that the hope is that they can elucidate different targets for prevention and intervention efforts to reduce the detrimental effects of maternal depression on offspring's mental and physical health across development.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the methodology used?
Yeah, so essentially, we conducted a systematic review that was in accordance with PRISMA guidelines. And we search for articles in PubMed and PsycINFO for studies in which the sample included mothers that had a DSM-defined depressive disorder that was assessed via a diagnostic interview or a clinical assessment. And the studies also had to include a measure of offspring emotional reactivity or regulation assessed at the biological level between birth to 18 years of age. Our review focused on biological measures, and some of these included autonomic psychophysiology, electroencephalography or EEG, MEG, event-related potentials, and then also structural and functional-based neuroimaging. So this search strategy returned over 6,000 articles, and we reviewed all of these to ensure that they met all of the requirements for our inclusion and exclusion criteria. And the final number of studies that we landed on for this review paper was 64.
Thank you. And what were the key findings? What were the things that stood out for you?
So in our paper, we focused our discussion on findings that were observed across two or more studies. So first, we found some pretty consistent evidence that youth of depressed mothers were observed to exhibit increased or heightened activation in the amygdala, which is a brain region involved in salience detection. And this increased response was found for different forms of negative stimuli, such as in response to seeing threatening or sad faces. We also found pretty consistent evidence with neuroimaging and EEG studies that these high-risk youth were prone to exhibit reduced brain activation responses to positive and rewarding stimuli, such as happy faces or in response to winning a reward. We also found that several resting state brain networks also differentiated these offspring of depressed versus non-depressed mothers, such that infants and youth of depressed mothers exhibited altered patterns of connectivity within several different brain networks that support adaptive emotion regulation, such as the cognitive control network and also the salience emotional network. And one interesting thing from our review was that across some of our measures, we found that some of these alterations in emotion processing were only apparent among youth of depressed mothers who were exposed to negative environmental contexts, such as higher levels of childhood maltreatment or exhibiting current emotional problems, such as higher levels of sadness or irritability. So we think that there might be some specific subgroups of offspring of depressed mothers that are particularly at elevated risk for experiencing these emotion processing patterns at the biological level. And then the last thing I'll say is that several of these patterns that we detected in the current review of altered emotion processing styles, we found that they were detected as early as infancy and early childhood, suggesting a potentially early emerging vulnerability factor that may be used to predict the later emergence of psychopathology in these high-risk offspring.
Thank you. So you highlight a large body of work showing that difficulties in emotion processing are central to the development and maintenance of many forms of psychopathology. And there is further evidence from longitudinal studies showing that alterations in emotion processing prospectively predict later psychopathology among offspring of depressed mothers, potentially reflecting a vulnerability process. As healthcare professionals, how can we impact this process to help alter the outcome?
Yeah, so this is such a great question. I think in general, as healthcare professionals, the first thing that comes to mind is that it's important to continue to screen for depression in mothers and not just assessing current depression, which is common practice, but also assessing for a prior history of depression as well, as many of the studies that we included in the current review included mothers with a past history of depression and they were not current. So we're seeing these alterations in emotion processing in these offspring of mothers with a past history of depression. So if we're only screening current depression, we might be missing families that are at highest risk. And so as healthcare professionals, we can continue to promote positive health behaviors in these mothers and also educate on the potential risks to offspring when depression and stress are particularly high and severe. So we still have a ways to go in terms of translating this work to prevention and intervention efforts. I think ideally we would have a system where after we do our screening as professionals, we can then determine, okay, which offspring are at greatest risk for experiencing depression and emotion processing abnormalities. And we could offer potential solutions for prevention and intervention efforts that might be the most useful in terms of improving emotion regulation skills in these families to mitigate this risk for depression.
Your paper identifies certain aspects, for example, elevated cortisol, and how this can alter fetal physiology, development, and growth. What are your thoughts on targeted interventions in the preconception period to prevent or limit the impacts of this occurring?
So this is a really exciting and developing area right now. So there are many new studies happening, you know, in this arena, testing if interventions that are aimed at improving maternal depressive symptoms prenatally may be useful in promoting healthy emotional development in offspring. So for instance, I know of one study that's occurring at the University of Denver, where they're using a randomized control trial to evaluate whether interpersonal therapy reduces depressive symptoms among pregnant mothers, and in doing so has an impact on offspring's emotion processing vulnerabilities across different units of analysis. So cortisol reactivity, utilizing neuroimaging assessments across development, and then seeing if these changes in emotion processing styles result in reductions in emotional and behavioral problems across development in these offspring. And others have done similar type of studies with cognitive behavioral therapy in mothers and showing some promising effects on infants' brain structure and development after birth. So I think this type of work has the potential to inform our mechanistic understanding of intergenerational risk patterns while also offering solutions for early psychopathology prevention, you know, beginning in infancy among these high-risk offspring.
So Katie, what would you suggest to those women and birthing people who have a history of mental health conditions and are considering having a baby in order to promote healthy emotional development of their offspring?
So yes, this is a great question. I think that the main thing I would suggest is to talk with your medical care professional. So whether this is your OBGYN, your primary care physician, your therapist or psychiatrist, and discussing your history of mental health conditions. In general, many women with depression may resist treatment whenever they are pregnant because they overestimate the risks of depression medication, for example, and underestimate the risks of untreated mental illness. So I think clinicians can help address this potential dilemma and provide optimum care to pregnant mothers by collaborating with patients on a treatment plan and informing them about the risks of potential untreated depression. And especially in the case of severe depression, we know that it's important for clinicians to discuss how certain meds like SSRIs and other forms of psychotropic medications are the appropriate form of care, even if a woman is pregnant or breastfeeding. And so after pregnancy, I think as mothers too, it's also important when possible to continue to seek support if you're suffering with postpartum depression. We know that it's not just depression prenatally that impacts these emotion processing alterations and also depression risk in offspring, but also the postnatal period is especially salient for shaping healthy emotional development in offspring. So as mothers, things that we can do are, you know, promoting appropriate emotion socialization, such as talking to our children about our emotions or their emotions when they're struggling or when we're struggling, and modeling good responses to emotional events can be really impactful in shaping the way our children learn and develop healthy emotion processing skills.
You highlight potential biological markers that may be used to inform early targeted prevention efforts for this high-risk population. Can you tell us more about the biological markers and what forms of interventions you are referring to?
Yes. So first, an important next step is for studies to actually test whether or not these alterations in emotion processing styles observed among offspring of depressed mothers in our review are actually longitudinally prospective predictors of future emotional and behavior problems. And if that is the case, we can start to use the term biological markers. So for instance, in our review, we saw pretty consistent evidence that kids of depressed mothers exhibited reduced brain activation to positive or reward relevant stimuli. So this might be a potential biological marker of future depression risk. And in fact, others have shown in the literature with community samples that a blunted reward response at the biological level does predict future depressive trajectories in youth. And so preventative interventions that are aimed at enhancing positive affect or reward response in this population come to mind. And my colleague Autumn Kujawa and I, we have actually been working to develop a positive affect prevention program for depressed mothers and their offspring that aims to enhance positive affect and reward response at the dyadic and individual level among families. And we have some preliminary evidence from this small pilot study that this type of prevention program is effective in enhancing positive affect in our offspring of depressed mothers and also preventing the emergence of broad psychopathology symptoms in these at-risk youth. So we think that this type of experimental therapeutics approach in which we develop interventions that directly target core mechanisms or biological markers of the disorder will ultimately prove to be the most impactful in preventing the emergence of early forms of psychopathology, such as depression in this case.
So what do you think needs to change within the current provision of healthcare in order to see a reduction in disruptions in emotion processing patterns amongst high-risk offspring, and in turn reducing the potential risk of child emotional and behavioral problems?
Yes. So great question, loaded question. I think in general, early intervention is key. So as healthcare professionals, as I've mentioned, I think we can do a better job of screening for depression among the mothers, both current and past histories, to determine which infants are at highest risk for potential adverse outcomes. But then the larger and more difficult question is, okay, so we flag this mother that's at high risk and this offspring, now what? This is where more research needs to come in to play to really test which interventions will be most impactful in preventing these emotion processing alterations and subsequent depression risk. And you may wonder what type of interventions would be useful here. Well, I've already touched on a few examples, but I'll highlight just a few more. So, you know, as I've said before, treating depression in the mother during pregnancy with psychotherapy or meds is important to see how it impacts the infant long term. I think in an ideal world, we would have insurances that would cover different forms of preventative interventions that have shown promise in changing outcomes for offspring. Typically, our insurances will usually only cover active interventions for individuals that are currently experiencing psychopathology. One example, though, is a family group-based cognitive behavioral therapy program that was developed by Bruce Compass at Vanderbilt University for depressed mothers and their offspring. And part of the program works with the parents on increasing positive parenting skills that may impact offspring's emotion processing styles and subsequent depression risk. And then other parts of the prevention program involve teaching offspring adaptive emotion regulation skills to use in their daily lives, whether that be for handling stress within the family and the mother or just stress within their everyday lives. And in this trial, the intervention has shown promise in improving emotion regulation skills and also decreasing rates of psychopathology in high-risk offspring. And so this type of approach, I think that if we could get insurances to cover prevention programs like these, this would go a long way in preventing the emergence of several different forms of psychopathology, not just depression, but anxiety disorders and behavior problems as well. This is just one example, but I think it gives an idea of where I think we need to move this work long-term from research to clinical practice.
That sounds really exciting. So are you planning some follow-up research, or is there anything else in the pipeline that you'd like to share with us? I was particularly drawn to paternal depression and the limited research there is currently, despite this being associated with a range of emotional and behavioral outcomes in offspring.
Yeah. So, you know, of course, that's always the question, right? We do not have any active studies right now with fathers, but we know fathers are important. And we know that paternal depression is also associated with a range of psychopathology symptoms in our offspring. So we are hoping to extend this work in the near future to include fathers and, you know, investigate these questions further with this population. I will talk about one study that we are getting ready to start in the next few months, which is an NIH-funded grant to continue exploring how alterations in emotion processing at the biological level are implicated not only in the development of depression in these high-risk offspring, but also the course of depression. So much of the work that we reviewed in our paper was limited by a single assessment point of emotion processing. So unfortunately, we know very little about what happens to these emotion processing styles or patterns once depression emerges in these high-risk offspring. So we suspect that as depression worsens, worsens or becomes amplified, these emotion processing alterations also become worsened or amplified. And so in this new grant, we are planning to assess emotion processing with neuroimaging and EEG every 12 months for 2 years in our offspring of depressed and non-depressed mothers. And we think that this type of approach may lead to the discovery of novel treatment targets for depression that could be aimed at improving emotion regulation abilities at the behavioral or brain level to decrease depression risk in our offspring. And within this project as well, we are also investigating whether or not there are certain subgroups of youth that are most vulnerable to experiencing these alterations in emotion processing. So an additional limitation of prior work in this area that we discuss in the review is that most studies did not include a diverse sample of offspring in terms of gender, race, and age, for example. And in fact, we did see some evidence in our review that age did impact some of the patterns of findings. Though again, many of these studies were underpowered to really understand the magnitude of the true effect. So in this new study, we are hoping to include a larger, diverse sample of youth in the Columbus region to evaluate whether or not there are certain subgroups of youth, so perhaps post-pubertal girls, that are at highest risk for experiencing depression through these pathways in emotion processing.
Look forward to reading that when you have that paper. So finally, what is your take-home message for our listeners?
The take-home message from our review paper is that although we have made significant progress in the past decade or so in terms of understanding why these offspring of depressed mothers are at heightened risk for experiencing depression, and in this case with our review highlighting the role of altered emotion processing styles, we still have a ways to go both in terms of research and clinical efforts. I think one main takeaway though is that many of these patterns that were detected in our offspring of depressed mothers were observed as early on as infancy. This highlights significant potential both research-wise and clinically to use this information to inform early detection for psychopathology and potentially early prevention programs. And I'm very excited for new research happening in this area using some of the biological markers that we discussed today to inform novel prevention efforts for these at-risk youth, and then continuing to advocate for professionals to screen for maternal depression and educate on the importance of reducing stress and depressive levels during pregnancy to ultimately protect the mother and the offspring.
Thank you ever so much, Katie. That was really interesting. For more details on Katie Birkhouse, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelt A-C-A-M-H. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoy the podcast with a rating or review, and please do share with friends and colleagues.